Welcome to Missing Persons Uncovered. I'm Caroline Humer, a child protection expert, and in this podcast series, we seek to understand the complexities of a global issue. Every year, hundreds of thousands of people go missing worldwide.
I'm Karen Shalev, and I carry out research into missing persons at the University of Portsmouth in the UK. Across this series, Caroline and I are talking to professionals to share insights into how we can all be more aware and take actions to protect vulnerable people in our communities and families from going missing. In this episode, Caroline will be talking to Simona Giobutaru. She is a senior lecturer in cybercrime at the University of Portsmouth. They will discuss the use and implications of social media in missing persons' public appeals.
Let's start at the beginning, because social media has become popular, I guess, since the mid-2000s, but general media and old-fashioned media has been around for ages and ages. So if you could explain a little bit of what interests you in this and how come you've done research into this.
So I have a really non-conventional background into how I got into my PhD research. I started off with a psychology degree from the US, where I focused on community psychology and employing social network analysis techniques. I then moved to the UK, did my master's degree, and within my undergrad and master's, I very much focused on vulnerable groups, such as those who had substance misuse disorders, those who were sort of in and out of prisons. And during my master's is when I met Karen, who introduced me to this research area of missing persons. I was really interested because I was very much passionate about trying to help vulnerable individuals and those who've sort of been marginalized in society and trying to reintegrate themselves back into society. And just from conversations with Karen, we talked about the use of social media and employing the methodology of social network analysis to try to understand what happens when a social media-based publicity appeal is released, any impacts on the missing individual, on organizations that are also releasing these appeals. So I essentially got sucked into doing a PhD, which was an amazing decision because now this is a really, really big part of my life. And I'm very passionate about trying to understand the role of technology within missing persons investigations. My PhD primarily looked at just Facebook and Twitter and social media platforms. But now I'm really interested in sort of branching out and understanding like DIY policing online, different types of community policing and crowdsourcing perspectives.
It is definitely a different perspective because we look at it and the idea of public appeals is, we've always said we want to get as many eyes as possible onto looking at the appeals or looking for the person that's missing, because law enforcement and the police do not have the manpower to look for them individually. And so social media is a great platform or a great tool, I should say, but it also has its pitfalls. But before we go into that, why don't we take a step back and look at how do you see the difference between the social media platforms and traditional media in the use of the public appeals for missing persons?
With regards to just the aims of publicity appeals, I think it's important to know that there are oftentimes competing aims when we are trying to appeal to the public for help. Some of the aims of publicity appeals, just in general, is to help locate the missing person. So essentially promoting sightings. And that data is very hard to come by. It's not collected regularly or consistently. But the next aim of publicity appeals is also to directly appeal to that missing person to make contact. And this is effective from my PhD research and working with the Missing People Charity. There have been many reports of missing individuals sometimes not knowing that they're reported missing or knowing that they're reported missing, but making contact with their family or law enforcement in the charity. That's a really effective outcome for a publicity appeal. It's also to satisfy families and informants and to show the public that a proportionate response is being made. This is sort of showing solidarity and showing support in that everyone is doing everything they can in order to search for this missing individual. Also to raise awareness of the issue of missing and available support services. So for example, I work with the Missing People Charity that do a lot of awareness campaigns. They do a lot of marathon runs, different social media campaigns as well. So it's really important to even just bring the issue of missing to the public's eye in terms of understanding that this is sort of a public health issue and trying to make the social issue relatable to the public to make them want to help. And lastly, with regards to publicity appeals, there's a lot of long-term cases that aren't resolved. So another aim of a publicity appeal could just be to memorialize the missing individual, to have anniversary appeals as well. Again, these are really important in just supporting the family and loved ones of that missing individual and continuing that search and not losing that hope. There's some research that has been done in Australia looking at the notion of ambiguous loss and how impactful that can be for families and loved ones of those that have gone missing. But I think with the different types of appeals, so with media, traditional media appeals compared to social media-based publicity appeals, they're very similar in that traditional media-based publicity appeals are very much focused on this concept of newsworthiness. What is sort of sensationalized? There's different aspects of newsworthiness, which looks at essentially different reasons why something would be published in traditional news media. So this is looking at sort of like individualism, if someone is a celebrity or of high status, if they're in proximity. So this is really important with missing persons searches and publicity appeals, is that it should be targeted to that geographical area where that missing individual is more likely to be found. But with traditional media, there has been this concept of newsworthiness, which has resulted in media bias. And this media bias has focused on three sort of different ways, which is looking at like the ideal victim. So who is worthy and unworthy of a news media appeal. We also have victim hierarchies of how they're represented within the news media. We also have the missing white woman syndrome, or this notion of damsels in distress. So middle-class white women tend to get more media coverage than those that are not middle-class and white. So, you know, minorities and other populations. And there's a lot of evidence of this bias in terms of age of the missing person, gender of the missing person, their race, their class, and even the type of case. So certain cases will be sensationalized, especially those about like homicide and stranger abduction. Whereas on social media, again, this is the similarity, is that we take this concept of newsworthiness and we understand it as shareworthiness. Mm-hmm. However, with social media, all of the publicity appeals that are released by organizations are considered user-generated content. So it's not sort of gatekept by, let's say, editors or journalists in terms of their own bias and what they want to publish.
It's asking the community right away to act or do something, whereas traditional media takes a minute because it's not necessarily always online, but in today's world mostly, but it still then takes a minute to get to the individual that's actually reading it. And I think, yes, you rightly said, for traditional media, it comes with a story. And with social media, it's more, here's the poster, here's the public appeal, not always with a story behind it, which then makes it a little different, but also quicker to put the information out because you don't have to wait for the story, but actually just put the relevant information out.
Simona's research explores how public appeals are shared on social media, by who and why.
I think what's interesting on social media is that the content is not as curated as it is with traditional media. So oftentimes, some of the things that have come up in my research is thinking about reasons why someone would share an appeal or why they wouldn't is based on that veracity. So how credible is that post? You know, who is posting that? Is it an organization? Is it law enforcement? Is it a charity? Is it a family member? Or what type of tone are they using? I think on social media, so during my research, I just looked at the Missing People charity, and they had very neutral templates in which appeals were sent out. So there was no emotional tones to the appeals. It always had the same type of information. The only thing that differed on these appeals were the missing person's characteristics. So it's a really nice way to compare what type of bias social media users have. And it's really interesting because we talk about media bias, and media is biased on what they report. But we also see users on social media are also biased as well. So results from my research showed that younger missing individuals tend to get more retweets or more shares. Also females tend to get higher engagement. So age and gender have been consistent even within news media and within social media users have.
I know your research focused purely on the public appeals coming from Missing People Charity, but do you, I also see that social media is then used by the guardians or the families that are searching for their loved ones. I guess that's sort of the, in a way, the downside with those because they're not controlled, right? You do not have the ability to know how true that information is with going through Missing People Charity or the police that put the information out. They've done their due diligence to know, okay, yes, the person is missing. Whereas if it's a family member or guardian, it becomes much harder. I guess what I'm trying to understand is there are benefits of using social media in these instances, but it can have a negative effect if it's not done right.
Absolutely. I think because it's so easy to create appeals, it's also very easy to screenshot appeals and lose control of that content. For example, within one of my research studies, I followed appeals throughout a 9-month period of time and noticed that they would plateau at a certain level of engagement or shares or retweets, but they weren't being removed. And this is something that sort of came to light within my research is this issue of digital footprints and how easy it is to just reverse image search an individual, just image or even just search their name within a Google bar and you will find their information, their older appeals. So I think with people who are looking for a loved one and using social media, the first thing to consider is ensuring that you minimize their digital footprint as best as you can. It's very difficult, and you can't control what other people are doing if they're screenshotting appeals. But always remove old posts and old appeals as soon as they're resolved, providing updates for the public and for just anyone that's following this particular case is really useful. So just providing updates to members of the community that you've asked for help is really important to also ask them to remove any images or anything that they've shared. I think also to not lose control of content and of appeals and information, it's important to still work with agencies within your area, any charities, or even with law enforcement. You know, they are there to help support you in releasing these publicity appeals and to sort of promote a safeguarding approach as well. By working together with organizations and charities, this will also increase the veracity of your appeal. Because if you have a callback number that is linked to like a case reference number or to call the charity or the police, the public is more likely to engage with it rather than putting your personal information out there. So that's another thing is by putting your personal information out there and searching for a missing loved one, you're also potentially putting yourself at risk. So putting your location, your phone number, your information can have a negative impact, but it's something to definitely consider.
Simona further explains how one can identify a good or a bad public appeal on social media.
I think it's the type of information that's included in the appeal. For example, I did a previous project in the past with some colleagues looking at social media posts and news media appeals and talking about vulnerabilities of missing individuals. And it's just with a good publicity appeal, there should be the information should be very clear and direct. There should be clear contact information. I think it's important to, again, work with agencies, work with organizations to help support. So if there is an influx of information coming in, you know, it can be quite stressful for a family member to deal with a lot of information that's being presented that might not be true or it might be true. But having that support and investigating and following up on these, I think law enforcement and charities are very good and very useful. I think with regards to a bad appeal, again, thinking about the amount of information that's released. So there's been new recommendations here in the UK, for example, of not releasing the surname of the missing individual, just sending out sort of direct, most essential information. Within my own research, I did a survey looking at just user perceptions of missing persons appeals. And I looked at the use of tone and emotive language. So looking at like sad language and humorous language. And all the participants indicated, all my samples said that it's just inappropriate in the context of missing persons to use any type of tone. And it doesn't necessarily increase the likelihood of the appeal being shared if it's very emotive. So I think just being really direct, having those links to organizations, having a really clear image as well. for example, previous research has found that the type of image can impact the level of engagement. So for example, within a study done looking at Greater Manchester police use and releasing publicity appeals, they found that those appeals that use custody photos had significantly less retweets on Twitter. Right. So it's just being really conscious of the type of image that's being used. The image should be reflective of that missing individual. Just having really clear-cut information.
And I think it also, it would help probably not only to have the date of when the person went missing, but of also on the appeal itself to have a date of when it was released. As you said, if you have that post out there 9 months, a year, 2 years, it may come back to you, but the person has already returned.
Yeah, definitely. This also contributes again to having these older appeals that are still posted online, contributing to that digital footprint of that missing individual.
Mm-hmm.
There's been, you know, during a missing incident, this can be a really vulnerable and sensitive time in an individual's life, and having that sort of digital footprint that's very difficult to remove can be problematic. So I totally agree. Having a warning or just being really specific about when this was posted, that the case was resolved. If the case is resolved, usually best practice is just remove it. You can't control other people screenshotting this information, but we assume that they're not, you know, unless they are using it for other purposes. But I think with the type of information that's typically shared is, again, is sometimes, so it's just the straight appeal. So just the information about the missing person. Sometimes it comes along with a story of how they went missing, location of where they've gone missing. There's been, I think one thing that often gets overlooked on social media is when sharing and disseminating an appeal. So I always use the example of, I live in the UK and my parents are in the US. And if I share an appeal of a missing individual in the UK and my parents are sharing it in the US, it's not that effective because it's not an issue there. So it's kind of being, when choosing what to share and what not to share, is think about the veracity, how local it is, right? In terms of, is that search area somewhere that you are located within? And do you have followers within that area, within your social media accounts, but also like vulnerability? So if someone has medications or health issues, I would probably seek the advice of a charity or law enforcement before releasing that information. But in terms of appearance of the person, anything that can produce a sighting is great. But again, is thinking about the type of tone that is used. So for my research, I only looked at neutral tones. But again, there's different appeals that use concerned, urgent, reassuring tones, sad, relieved. So it's just understanding the context of that case and just being transparent as possible.
And in the end, I think what the public's looking for is just the facts of saying, okay, this person is missing. How can I help?
Yeah.
And so it would have to be local. It has to be regionalized or targeted to a particular area, because that's the more likelihood of then getting good leads and good intelligence to actually find the person. I think the need to have it localized as much as possible is great, but that at the same time, it's the flip side of, you want to see it, you want as many people to see it as possible at the same time. So it's that fine balance. That's the hard part, I think, with social media, because it's not as nuanced as traditional media.
Yeah, I think within my research, I've talked about the sort of paradoxical relationship that media publicity appeals for missing persons have on social media. And it's essentially what you were just saying in terms of the fact that we want super high exposure, we want super high levels of dissemination. But at the same time, we're trying to safeguard that missing individuals. We want people to go viral, but we don't at the same time in order to safeguard them. And with virality comes consequences, such as with increased attention, there can be a lot of misinformation online. There was a famous case within the UK, the Nicola Bully case, that resulted in a lot of conspiracy theories being propagated online. And that doesn't help the public that is trying to look for Nicola Bully. Also, when the public gets too involved, this can be problematic in that they go to the scene. Within the case of Nicola Bully in the park, they're going to the scene. They could be touching potential evidence. We want attention.
That's why I think it's important to have the right information that go with the appeal, the tone, the photo information, and then putting it on the right platforms. And I guess I know your research focused mainly on Facebook and Twitter, or it's called now X, I guess.
Yeah.
But with those two, and considering X is not probably the biggest or the most used anymore compared to 3 years ago, how do you see social media platforms like TikTok or Snapchat, who are different, play a role in this?
I think definitely. So now with regards to social media research, it's constantly changing. And every year you think you're ahead and you're not, because there's a new functionality, a new platform, the algorithm has changed. I think what's important to note is that when I was doing my research on Facebook and Twitter back in 2019, those were the two main platforms that the organizations were using. Now, the charity, for example, is using Instagram. I don't think they're using Snapchat, but I think there is a lot of potential in using these platforms such as TikTok, Snapchat, and Instagram that are image-based, because we see that younger demographics tend to consume video-based content a lot more than just static words. The only issue is the algorithm behind these platforms. One, there's different demographics using each platform. They work in very different ways, and users are using Snapchat, Instagram, and TikTok for very different reasons. So it's appealing to three different demographics. But the problem with missing persons appeals is that we have the same information we want to share, but we need to cater to those different types of users. So I think with regards to these new platforms, it's really important to see how with TikTok, it's much easier to go viral when exposure is very easy, depending on the types of hashtags that are used. But with TikTok as well, it's very difficult to sometimes remove content. If people are screen recording, reposting content. We've seen this with problematic, like politically problematic content on TikTok, where people try to get it removed and then it gets reposted and reposted again. There's different bot accounts that start reposting, you know, the same content. So it's easier to lose control, but the exposure is better. So again, it's this paradox again. If our main sort of goal is to safeguard the missing individual, we would have to tread lightly with posting on TikTok. I think TikTok is a huge, powerful tool. As a Snapchat, because Snapchat, you have that geographical targeting capability on there. And it's also sort of smaller, more close networks on Snapchat. So people tend to snap friends and each other, not so much strangers. But I think it's the way we strategize and we try to target these users needs to be tailored to that platform. We can't just use like a blanket approach to all of these platforms, because they work very differently.
Have you seen, between the general public appeals and the social media appeals, a big change in success, that the social media appeals have become more successful than the traditional media? Or is there no research in that comparison?
It's a really good question, because usually success can be measured in different ways. If we're just primarily looking at citing, and there's not much empirical evidence to support that one is better than the other. We assume that there's a relationship between, let's say, if there's an appeal on social media and then it's picked up by the traditional media, it'll have a higher exposure. But again, it's really important to collect that data of whether there is a sighting that has led from that specific appeal is usually not collected. So there's no evidence to suggest that. I haven't seen within my own research and within research in general, I haven't seen many studies looking at the outcome of finding a missing person. It's more so just engaging with these different types of appeals. The main recommendation is if you have large followings, then you should be resharing, because it has higher exposure. I've had conversations with law enforcement, for example, about this. Let's say if we release like 6,000 appeals a year or 7,000 appeals a year, and only three lead to a sighting, does that mean that publicity appeals are ineffective or effective? And we can argue both sides in that any life matters, and it doesn't matter.
Right.
Even if it's 0.01% success rate, that means it's working. And this is why we should do it. But if we're looking at from a business model perspective, it's not as efficient. But this is not a business. These are people's lives.
In Europe and the UK, there are laws that allow the public to request the removal of information that can be labeled as not in the public's interest. Simona describes how these laws may help with the removal of publicity appeals.
So with the right to be forgotten legislation, that links to data protection regulations. And within the UK and the EU, we also call it the right to erasure. Within this context, it is down to the service providers, such as Google, to be removing this content. And when we think of privacy implications, it's important, one, to have a justification for why that information, that personal sensitive information, needs to be removed and how it's impacting someone's livelihood. But it's also, which I think is kind of controversial at times, it is also down to that service provider, such as Google, to remove that content and to decide whether that fits that sort of remit of removing information. And we've seen with previous statistics that it's a very low rate of removal. So there's many requests that are put in, but them actually being removed takes a lot of time. Again, the judgment is based on the service provider. It's not based on the public. We have now in the UK, the new Online Safety Act that has been passed now in 2023. And again, there's huge responsibilities in terms of regulating online content that is placed on these companies, on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. They're all now responsible for regulating harmful or illegal content and removing that type of content. But it's positives and negatives, I think. But with a publicity appeal, especially within cases that go viral, it is so difficult to identify how many individuals have shared it, if their profiles are private or not. Where has this been screenshotted, saved on another device, shared in different ways? It is very easy to lose control of that information, but it also shouldn't make everyone risk averse in posting publicity appeals, because it is really important to just raise awareness. And there's been some really good campaigns, such as the, I think it was the Belgium Focus campaign. So they've done it 6 years ago, where they use a campaign to humanize the issue of missing. It's called A Missing Child is Closer Than You Think. And it's many people, they come together, they're talking to others, and they're talking about this missing person's case. And they realize that they actually know that missing individual. Making these topics more relatable to people, I think, is really important to do on social media. And it's a very fine-tuned craft of presenting this information authentically, not overly curated, for users to want to share it and engage with it.
The appeal that you mentioned from Child Focus, I love it, because it is sort of the six degrees of separation aspect of, you ask six of your friends and there will be somebody who's had an experience. I think that's where people don't realize how many people are affected by this.
Simona continues to highlight that not all missing instances are made into publicity appeals. This is done to ensure that there is no compassionate fatigue.
When I was doing my research, I asked the charity on average how many appeals they release a year. And the most recent statistic that I have is from like 2017, 2018, which is around like 6,500 appeals. And if we think of, with just based in the UK, of the actual prevalence of missing incidents actually getting a social media based publicity appeal, it's around 2% or less. And also, all of these cases were high risk cases. This is sort of a last resort. We are really trying to search for these individuals. But I think another aspect of this that we're sort of talking about is this notion of compassionate fatigue. And this is, I think, a huge worry for organizations and law enforcement that are releasing appeals constantly, is that this can cause that compassionate fatigue, where essentially the public is losing that sympathy from being overexposed to sort of news media, traumatic events. It sort of loses our ability to sympathize and to want to share or to want to participate in a search, for example. So I think it's really important to understand the role that compassionate fatigue has. And the other thing that I think plays a role on social media is this concept of a digital identity. One day you might share it, but some days you're like, I'm not feeling it. This is not the right platform. And the way people present themselves online does impact how they behave online and their online behaviors. And especially considering, so within my PhD research, my last study, I asked people reasons why they wouldn't or why they would share appeals. And a lot of reasons why people wouldn't share appeals is based on the platform that they were on, because it just wasn't suitable to how they presented themselves on that platform.
Yeah.
You know, so whether it was Instagram or Snapchat or TikTok, it's just, if it's not aligning with how their self-presentation is online, then it's unlikely that, it doesn't mean that they don't care. It's just not how they want to portray themselves, you know, in that digital space. So I think understanding how complex these behaviors are, that it's not just a simple clicking and Yes, I care. No, I don't care. It's much more
Yeah.
complex than that. But there is a need for further research to sort of understand this level of compassionate fatigue. To what level is it present? How important is that role of digital identities in the context of missing persons and trying to support a social act of social cause, for example, online?
That's always the fine balance. And certainly when we talk about Amber Alerts or Child Rescue Alert in the UK, it's that fatigue. There's a reason why we only do those for very specific high risk cases, because we don't want that fatigue. But then we also then have the general public appeals that don't qualify for Amber Alerts or Child Rescue Alerts. And those are then even further in a small percentage in itself, because as you said, it's less than 2% or 1% of all cases end up in public appeal, which makes it really hard for the public to understand how big this issue is. That's really the tough part when it comes to this. In the end, it's all about the individual and of how you feel at that time and the personal identity.
As sort of the last question I wanted to ask is, what do you see we need to look out for with social media in the future?
I think one thing I would like to share with regards to just strategies for the future is one, just thinking about how we can reevaluate social media strategies and how we're currently using social media as that blanket approach is just not the most effective way. One is collecting data, providing empirical support. And two, it's understanding, as we talked about, those complex behaviors and even this understanding of passive and active consumption, like mindlessly scrolling through a newsfeed compared to using something for a specific purpose that you're more actively engaged with. I think there's a lot of promise in the use of different technologies and platforms in releasing missing persons appeals, especially now with innovations in artificial intelligence and sort of facial recognition and things like that. But these technologies are still biased. So it's just understanding that role of bias and how does it play when we create strategies for searching for missing individuals using online search techniques, even looking at open source investigative techniques. You know, any member of the public can participate in these types of investigative techniques, but it's just thinking about and acknowledging that there is bias in the information that people are presented with. So understanding how the technology works is very much key in developing these strategies.
I really appreciate your time, Simona. This has been great conversation. I love it. We definitely need to delve into it more in details in the future. And we'll have to wait to see what the social media platforms will do in the next decade with all of this.
Thank you very much for having me as well. It was a pleasure to get to talk about this topic with you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Missing Persons Uncovered. And thank you, Pascal Washnik, for sharing your insight into trauma-informed care for families and returned missing persons. Please check out her research and any resources on this topic on our website.
If you have any questions you would like us to answer or thoughts on topics you would like us to discuss, please contact us through our website. If you'd like specific information or need help, please reach out to your local police department or national charity. If you are enjoying this podcast and discussion, please help support us by buying us a coffee through missingpersonsuncovered.com.
I'm Karen Shalev.
I'm Caroline Humer. Thank you for listening. Join us next time when we talk to Cheryl Alsop about how challenging cold cases or long-term missing person cases can be.